we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
When I sing, I don't want them to see that my face is black. I don't want them to see that my face is white. I want them to see my soul, and that's colorless. Thank goodness for Marian Anderson. I'm Dr. Marilyn Singleton, and welcome to America Out Loud Pulse on America Out Loud Radio Network. In 1939, the Daughters of the American Revolution refused to allow the famous opera singer Marian Anderson to sing for an integrated audience in Constitution Hall in Washington, D.C. Segregation did not win out. President Franklin and Mrs. Roosevelt saw to it that she performed on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial in front of 75,000 Black and white music lovers. And America continued to move forward at a steady pace. But what strange times we live in now. We went from Ralph Ellison's novel, Invisible Man, brilliantly exploring what it means to be socially or racially invisible, to almost every ad on television, including a person of one color or another. We had segregated army barracks, motels, restaurants, clubs, entertainment venues, and that was socially and politically acceptable. But then integration became the law of the land. And as time passed, people realized that they were missing out on a whole side of life by closing the door on meeting new and interesting people. We were organically moving to a blended society where people were looking at one another just as people, judging them by their jobs or their hobbies, but not by their race. Now we have segregated college dorms, dining halls, and so-called affinity groups. What happened? After years and years of progress, we have a sick regression into separatism. Instead of, if you are white, you're all right. If you're black, stay back. All white people are now inherently evil deep down inside and should flagellate themselves for the sin of being born white. And all black people should be forgiven for any antisocial behavior because they can't help themselves. How racist is that? My goodness, that's what they call progressive these days. This new diversity, equity, and inclusion movement, they call it DEI, is yet another elitist movement that does nothing to help the people that the movement pretends to help. The DEI movement is stripping mainly Blacks, but ultimately all people, of their dignity. When we lose our individuality, we lose our true selves, we lose our souls. Human nature being what it is, people don't want to be labeled as victims. They like to be a winner, and nobody wants to be a loser. Remember those big L's, loser, loser. Who wants that? But propaganda and indoctrination being what it is, it can demoralize anyone into, as the Soviets would say, ideological subversion. Yes, no question. Racism exists. Racists exist. One of my dream conversations, of course, is asking a professed racist who's on dialysis with kidney failure if he would take a kidney from a Black person. Students as young as kindergarten are being taught to judge others by their race. How could somebody think that's acceptable to poison young minds? These are the same minds that were told in Brown versus the Board of Education in 1954 that separate is inherently unequal. A school in Hayward, California, instituted a, quote, woke kindergarten where teachers learn how to combat whiteness. Sadly, the federal money was allocated to help improve performance in a low-performing school. Instead, after 2 years, the English and math scores were 4% lower, and only 4% of students were proficient, and about 12% scored at grade level in English. And overall, the latest data show that only 35% of fourth graders are proficient in reading and 41% are proficient in math. So instead of learning the necessary skills to race to the top of the ladder of success, they have the tools to win the victim triathlon. And what's the prize? Dependency on government resources. What a waste of government money was this program. The money would be better spent on junior science fair projects or field trips to the Museum of Science and Technology or art museums. Oh, these sorts of things just make me sick. Schools at all levels now have institutionally supported affinity groups. And to me, that's the newspeak word for segregated groups. And I have to point out, these aren't just friends getting together. I mean, that's what friends are for. If you want to discuss issues you have, or you're feeling bad about something, or you think there's some big problem at school. But when you have these school-sponsored segregated groups, that's where I draw the line. These DEI folks are echoing the rhetoric of the opponents to integrated schools. They say people of different races learn better in separate environments where they can be their true selves. How is this diversity and inclusion? It seems like grouping together children with the same interests like math, science, sewing, music, sports would be a more enriching program. But no, they double down. Some schools now have, get this, separate times for Black and LGBT students to use the swimming pool. This just cracks me up. Back in, I guess it was the 50s, there's a center in Lima, Ohio called the Bradfield Center, which I must brag, it's named after my grandfather. And the city built a swimming pool to add to the center. And I was talking to the fellow who used to be the director of the center, and he said, well, they built that swimming pool so then the Black kids wouldn't have to swim in the main municipal pool with the white kids, you know, that they weren't being all magnanimous. So here we go from not wanting little Black kids to swim in the same swimming pool, then suddenly anybody could go swimming wherever they want. And now these schools are segregating again. What is wrong with these people? Then we get to corporations. They've devoted time and money into these DEI trainings, billions by some folks' estimation. Some have permanent, very highly paid DEI officers. But to me, DEI seems to fall into H.L. Mencken's adage. There's always an easy solution to every problem, neat, plausible, and raw. Let's have a re-education session and tell people they're a racist and tell them how to be an anti-racist. How do you be an anti-racist? Don't be a racist. Oh, one key issue with some of these DEI trainings and concepts is that the U.S. Constitution provides, quote, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. Beyond the legal prohibition against such segregated programs, separation doesn't allow students to learn and accept differences of others. Indeed, most children don't focus on the differences, but they wonder whether their classmate likes the newest video game. And then I wonder about the effects of DEI on medicine. Medicine as a profession has advanced to include all races and males and females. My father went to an all-black college and medical school. I went to a white college and medical school. When I was in medical school, the OBGYN department accepted its first female resident. Now, over half of OBGYNs are female. Times do change. Diversity advances aside, competence still matters. When I was in medical school, in addition to basic science, we had a very revolutionary course at the time. It was called communication skills. This was a valuable addition, particularly for folks who majored in science in college and maybe were kind of nerdy. Of course, along with the basic and clinical science, students had to learn how to take what we call then a social history. And you also had to develop a sense of medical ethics and just know how to compassionately talk to patients. Now, UCLA first-year medical students have a required course called Structural Racism and Health Equity. The title of the course speaks volumes. The course makes the assumption that racism is structural, that ingrained in healthcare and our society, there is racism. Indeed, some young adults, even in this day and age of the internet, are unaware of issues that plague certain racial and ethnic groups, but all roads don't lead to racism. There's no question that there are racial disparities in many aspects of life in the United States, including medical care. But we have to address that. It seems instead of doing the hard work of getting down to the root of problems, academia has taken the easy way out by declaring that racism is the cause of healthcare disparities. The solutions start with racism and in with indoctrination into reverse racism. One disturbing aspect of the UCLA course is the overt politics in some of the assigned readings. For example, asserting that there's no border crisis and open borders are a medical intervention. Now, it seems like political agendas, not patients, have taken precedence. UCLA also encourages illegal immigrants to apply and will supply loans to cover full costs. What about financially strapped white students? I guess they don't deserve any scholarships. UCLA, as well as many other medical schools, have adopted the White Coats for Black Lives vision and values document that reads more like a Marxist manifesto. Our White Coats for Black Lives job is twofold. Listen to this. This is a mouthful. This is a quote. I'm not making this up. Dismantling dominant exploitative systems in the United States, which are largely reliant on anti-Black racism, colonialism, cis-heteropatriarchy, white supremacy, and capitalism. And two, rebuilding a future that supports the health and well-being of marginalized communities. Number two sounds fine to me. I'd like to know why that's number two and not number one. White Coats for Black Lives assert that medical providers must unlearn the, quote, false equivalency between weight and health, and that fat people must have access to affirming health care free of stigma and guilt. Obviously, we should never shame any of our patients, but not because being, quote, anti-fat is being anti-Black. Research has shown that obesity is tied to all sorts of health problems like diabetes, heart disease, arthritis, sleep apnea, lots of types of cancer, and now they're even finding pregnancy and fetal issues are affected by obesity. What this thinking is just totally off the wall. White Coats for Black Lives asserts that in order to help unrepresented minorities, one must, quote, follow the guidance from Black queer feminists. The group believes we must establish a mandatory minimum wage, defund the police, abolish prisons, and decriminalize prostitution, dismantle capitalism, and profess that socialism provides one alternative that establishes collectively owned resources and prioritizes basic human rights. Clearly, this isn't just looking to improve the lives and medical care for some underrepresented people. This is an entire political ideology that they're trying to convert folks to. This deafening drumbeat of race, race, racism, and more race is leaving its mark. The workplace has turned into a minefield. In 2021, Dr. Tabia Lee, a Black woman, was hired to lead the DEI department at Silicon Valley's De Anza College. When she began working on a truly inclusive educational experience, she was vilified by her colleagues. She was not the, quote, right kind of Black person. She wasn't a fan of the singular focus on critical race theory and white supremacy that were in the DEI trainings. Well, she was fired. The DEI movements focused on the oppressed and the oppressors has fostered anti-Semitism as well. After all, despite the history of Jewish slavery, oppression, and genocide, they're now considered part of the oppressor class. This is a logical outgrowth of the DEI movement that focuses on differences rather than our shared humanity. Oh, social work, particularly medical social work, should have the kindest people in the workplace. Ironically, my guest today is one of those folks who was caught in a workplace web of wokeness gone amok and anti-Semitism. After the break, we're going to talk with Tammy Weissman. She was a child of an Israeli mother and Canadian father. And after her father's death from cancer, the family lived in Israel for 3 years before returning to Canada. She completed graduate work in social work at Yeshiva University in New York City, and she spent 23 years in oncology mental health at a large academic hospital and has presented her work with oncology patients nationally and internationally. After the break, we are going to talk with Tammy Weissman. Right now, I'd like to talk to you about CofixRx. I know you've heard me talk about this before. Unfortunately, we're still in cold and flu season. Sometimes I think cold season never goes away. But Cofix is really a big help. It's a nasal spray, simple ingredients, iodine and xylitol, both of which are strong antiviral medications. And I use Cofix when I go out and going to be around a lot of people that I don't know and breathing in a bunch of germs, because 95% of these respiratory illnesses we get, we inhale through the nose. So use Cofix in that first 2 to 5 days when the viruses are replicating. You can stop that and hopefully not get sick. You got to think of it like an airbag, though. Nothing is 100%, but gee whiz, for me, it's worked, and I haven't gotten any colds or flu since I've been using it, which is, gee, a couple of years. It was invented during COVID, and one thing I love about it, it was invented in the USA, and it's manufactured in the USA. You can check out more about Cofix. We've got a little Cofix button on our page. Read all about it and see if it's right for you.
You've all heard Dr. McCullough and others share over and over the value of keeping your sinuses cleansed. It's a smart move all year, but even more so when we're cooped up inside. It's not really open for debate any longer. Those that live smart and live well pay attention to nasal and oral hygiene. Cofix RX has just the tools for the job with our nasal and throat cleanse. Click the Cofix RX banner on AmericaOutloud.shop to get 20% off your entire order. That's right, AmericaOutloud.shop. Use coupon code OUTLOUD. That's coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off your entire order.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit HealRight.com/OutLoud or AmericaOutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
ASEA believes that inside each of us is the potential to feel our very best. Our redox-based products tap into reserves within you to power your personal well-being. Make our breakthrough products an essential step in fulfilling your greatest potential. ASEA, we power potential. For exclusive savings, use code OUTLOUD to save 15% off your first order today.
Before the break, I said I was going to introduce you to my guest today, Tammy Weitzman. Welcome to the show, Tammy.
Thanks so much, Marilyn, for having us.
Okay. Now, Tammy, I want you to just start from the beginning. First, let us know how you got into doing social work for oncology.
Sure. So I started really in the early to mid 90s in Toronto, Canada. As you mentioned before, you spoke a little bit about my parents. My father died of cancer in around 1973. So when cancer care was in its infancy, cancer care, cancer treatment, all of that. And I was 5 years old. And as I grew older, I began to follow, you know, America has the American Cancer Society, Canada has the Canadian Cancer Society. I was really one of those kids that followed the five signs of cancer of the American Cancer Society. I actually had it posted on my bedroom bulletin, you know, cork bulletin board. So it really impacted me tremendously. And when I decided to pursue social work, I knew that I wanted to focus in medicine, and my mother was a psychiatric nurse. Her entire career spanned about 55 years. And so I had the opportunity to work in oncology, and I took it, and I was still in Toronto, Canada, and loved it. And once I realized that this was something that I could do to sort of, I guess, give back in a way that I couldn't when I was a young child with a parent with the illness, I never wavered. And I knew that this was my ultimate passion and ultimate dream. So I found it very young. I found it young in my schooling and continued with it. In fact, when I was in graduate school, the professors knew so much that this is what I wanted to do that they said, yeah, we're going to put that on hold and have you do an internship in a different area. I think I worked in liver transplantation for a year and in Harlem for another year. So they really wanted me to expand my horizons, but I came right back to it when I graduated and was fortunate enough to focus my entire career in the area of hemonc, which is hematology oncology, and bone marrow stem cell transplantation, as well as covering pretty much every solid tumor clinic that you could think of. Yeah. And that's how I began.
Well, what is it that a social worker does for cancer patients?
Yeah, that's a great question. So a lot of people have different settings, have different duties or different ways in which these social workers work. I was blessed to work in hospitals that were major academic medical centers where discharge planning was not part of my job, where it was counseling. It was counseling and therapy with patients and their families. If they were before transplant, during transplant, post-transplant, long-term follow-up with them. And then in some areas where I covered the leukemia and the lymphoma and the multiple myeloma clinics, it was really meeting with patients just as they were getting the news of diagnosis and following them through their brand new diagnosis and treatment, and really helping them adjust to their care, to their treatment, to the fact that they had cancer. So, you know, what we see in the arena of cancer and mental health, or as it's also called, psycho-oncology, are a lot of adjustment disorders with mood and anxiety and depression. And oncology social workers, at least in the places that I've worked in, help patients adapt to all of that, help them through their depression, help them through their anxiety, through a variety of clinical modalities. And that's what I did for 23 years.
Well, I hope, if God forbid I ever get cancer, I'm someplace where they have someone like you. Well, I can't help but notice you said that's what I did. And now we'll let our listeners know why you're even here after listening to my long rant about DEI and some of the bad things about it. What happened to you? Do tell.
Yeah, so numerous things occurred to me and during the 5 years that I worked in Seattle, Washington. I worked at the Seattle, at the time it was called the Seattle Cancer Care Alliance. Today it's called the Fred Hutch Cancer Center. I worked there for 5 years. I would say about 4 out of those 5 years were quite difficult for me. I experienced much hardship in my career. So, about a year into working at the Fred Hutch Cancer Center, I was asked to supervise two social workers who were not fully licensed. Non-fully associate social workers need a supervisor. They require supervision in order to get their hours to be licensed. So, they were pre-licensed social workers. And unfortunately, that didn't really go well. I experienced two particular comments from these two colleagues. I really supervised them for just a few weeks because they expressed that they did not want to work with me. I had heard them say, and they had said to me, that I was a white Canadian born and raised in Toronto, Canada, a white Canadian bitch who cuts people off. On another occasion, I was called a white kike, which is a derogatory term for somebody of the Jewish faith. So my tenure with them, as far as supervising them, was very, very short, a matter of weeks, really. I had reported both of those instances immediately to my manager at the time. We had meetings between myself and each of the supervisees, each of my colleagues. To my knowledge, nothing was said or done to them. However, I was very pointedly directed to look for and take a diversity training course, which I did. I took it at a downtown Seattle church over a 2-day period. And that was really one of the first major incidences that happened to me early on.
How could you possibly even stay there after the first time somebody name called? And why was it that your supervisors did nothing? I mean, it sounds like you reported it. What did they do?
Nothing to my knowledge. I was the one that was told that there was a problem with me, and that's why I was directed in taking a diversity training course, a 2-day diversity training course. I don't know why. Nothing was done to my other colleagues, the supervisees. I can't speak for my former manager. But there were several other instances that occurred along my time there.
Well, this is kind of appalling, sometimes seems like too light of a word that a supervisor wouldn't pursue something when somebody made racially charged statement. I can't imagine if the statements were in the other direction. So what happened with these DEI trainings?
Yeah, so I just want to go back for a second to what you said around why didn't you leave? So, first of all, it's not easy to leave jobs, particularly when you're invested and particularly when it is your life's work. This job was my life's work. It wasn't a 9-to-5 for me. It was my passion. It is something that I had worked for and was groomed by physicians and mentored by social workers in my past, very early on. So, and I enjoyed my work with patients, and so I didn't leave. What happened? We had, DEI meetings, several DEI meetings during the time that I was there. And there was one DEI meeting where, I was always being told by my manager as these DEI meetings were taking place. At the time, they were called race and allyship meetings. Now they're called more DEI meetings. And so I was always told by her, you're appearing disinterested, Tammy. You're not speaking up. Everybody's speaking up at you. You really need to speak up. And it wasn't just a gentle sort of, hey, you really need to, it was, you have to start speaking up. So in one particular meeting, I began to recount a story that I thought would be very applicable. It was a story that it was something that I experienced as an adolescent where I was at a friend's home and her parents were very anti-Semitic. And I think I knew that at the time, but I couldn't imagine what would be to follow. And I spent the night there, but early in the morning, her parents had asked me to leave because they found out that I was Jewish. And so, of course, I left. And that was something that impacted me, of course, in my life. So I told that story to illustrate that, hey, yeah, I get it. I understand what it's like to feel, to feel discriminated against. And after, my entire team was there, my manager was there, everybody was there. And the facilitator of the group said, well, okay, but gee, Tammy, that really doesn't matter because you're white and you can pass. Person of color can't pass. You can pass.
Golly. So that means you weren't discriminated against. I guess people need to think about everything that's happened after October 7th of 2023 and all the rampant anti-Semitism.
And I guess 70 years ago, gee, 6 million people didn't pass, but I can somehow pass today, right? Yeah.
So, well, it all depends on how you look at things. Now, tell me, before we go to break, we've got a few minutes. Tell me about an article that one of the coworkers had sent around the office.
Right. So I will get to that. I'd like to get to that in a minute, but I do want to say that I experienced other types of harassment and unwanted comments, shall we say. I knew the family quite well for well over a decade of a high-ranking official in the Trump administration, and people knew that. I over 12 years ago, 13 years ago now, was honored to participate in the cancer treatment of this official's family member, and family kept in touch with me for several years, and I knew him. I knew him well. I knew him. I knew the family well. And I think, you know, my colleagues felt that it was like a free-for-all to send emails, unsolicited emails. They were rude comments, and it reached a threshold where I just, it was enough. And I had a relationship with our HR business partner. I called her. I told her this was going on. I asked for some assistance to stop it because I felt that it was really getting to be harassment at this point. And she indicated to me that she certainly could speak with the medical director's office and intervene, but it would really cause me a lot of discomfort in my job. And gee, don't you value your job? And yes, I do. I love my job. And so it would just be better for me to, you know, handle it on my own. So that was another instance that took place over quite a while, about 2 years, I'd say.
All right. Well, I'm sitting here thinking, I'm glad it didn't happen to me. And I'm sure a lot of people are thinking they're glad it didn't happen to them, because nobody knows how they'd respond, how they'd react. Many people, you need your job, so you'll put up with anything. But you're here because you're not putting up with it. So after the break, we'll get into that email and what you're doing about the problem in this last segment. Right now, I'd like to thank everybody for listening to America Out Loud Pulse on America Out Loud Talk Radio. I just can't tell you how glad we are to have you listening. People love the Pulse. And so many people say, why? Why? Because we're always a beat ahead. You can hear Pulse every weekday at 5 p.m. with an encore at 10 p.m. and on iHeartRadio at 8 a.m. the next morning. All of our shows go direct to podcast in 24 hours, and the episodes are on lots of podcast networks: Apple, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, Stitcher, and iHeart. So make it easy. Bookmark americaoutloud.news/pulse. Our lineup is, I tend to think it's wonderful because it's got a different doctor on every night. Mondays, me, Dr. Marilyn Singleton. Tuesdays, we've got Dr. Jordan Vaughn and Dr. Stuart Tankersley. Wednesday, Dr. Peter McCulloch and Malcolm Out Loud have a great conversation. Thursdays, Dr. Peter Bregan and Ginger Ross Bregan. And Fridays with epidemiologist Dr. Harvey Reich. If that's not enough medical news, we've got Nurses Out Loud Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern. So thanks again for listening. Sometimes we've got more politics than medicine, sometimes more medicine than politics, but always interesting.
Expert opinions, honest debate, and in-depth investigations are what you've come to expect from AmericaOutloud.news. We don't shy away from speaking the truth boldly and plainly. All that's missing is the propaganda that has infected legacy and social media. Get the best of down and dirty, wholesome American speak. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of the toxic spike protein. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed their spike support formula to counteract harmful spike protein from COVID-19 and vaccines so you can feel your best. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
Clean, pure, with premium ingredients, Global Healing's Pure Plant Protein offers 20 grams of protein per scoop And it's a perfect way to maintain and build lean muscle while indulging yourself. It combines enzymes and probiotics to maximize nutrient absorption, improving digestion and your gut health. Available in vanilla and chocolate flavors, elevate your protein consumption while supporting your overall wellness with pure plant protein. Go to AmericaOutloud.shop and get 15% off using the code OUTLOUD. Global healing, giving you the power to take control of your health naturally.
Before the break, I was talking with Tammy Weitzman about her experience while she was just trying to do her job as a oncology social worker. And I guess some folks didn't like her conservative views, and some folks didn't like her Jewish heritage. And she received a particular email. Tammy, would you go into that email?
Yeah, so this was during the last DEI session, race allyship meeting over Zoom, because it was around COVID that I attended prior to my departure. And after the session, a colleague said, hey, you know, I'm going to send out an article for all of you, meaning all of the social work staff, to use as talking points with patients and their families to help them talk about racism. So I'm going to read you, I'm going to read the title of the article. The article was actually in 2016 when President Trump first was elected. The title of the article is How We Are to Use Our Skills and Influence to Resist the Upcoming Trump Administration and the Hatred and the Violence that it Inspires. So this was an article that was sent over company email to at least 12, 14 social workers. I was deeply offended by it because in its contents, there were some virulent racial statements around Trump supporters and around, you know, talking to your Trump supporting family. And, you know, of course, I knew several people in the Trump administration. I would still consider them very good people. I had personal close friends who were helped by the Trump administration. I did not understand why this article, with all of its venom, was circulated on company email, and why I was being told to use it with talking points. And there was some, there was a disparaging paragraph about Jews in there. And so I called up my manager. I was just aghast. I couldn't believe what I was reading. And I said to her, listen, you know, I'm really offended by this and I really disagree with this. Why are we bringing politics into this? What does this have to do with our patient care? And she said, well, it very much has to do with it. And we should talk about other things as well. But, you know, you need to tell this colleague, you need to call her back and you need to let her know how you feel about this. And I said, she's an open, radical progressive. She's a social justice warrior. It is not safe for me to, you're my manager. It should be safe for me to tell you. And, you know, she's your staff. I'd appreciate it if you would discuss this with her. And she refused and directed me to speak with her. So I spoke with her and I said to her, listen, you know, my whole thing here is that, you know, this just doesn't sit well with me. And I really am concerned about this and I disagree with it. And she said, well, we're not going to agree about the contents of this because I believe that it's true. And I said, well, then, you know, how about we just agree to disagree? I find it very offensive. And she said, absolutely, sure, we can agree to disagree. And that was really the end of it. It was a very short phone call. It, you know, we weren't friends, we were colleagues, and it ended. And she said, absolutely. And then about a week later, I get very long email from her, what I would call a very racial racially heated email from her, and she proceeded to copy my manager, all my leadership, my manager, her, my manager's manager, and our human resource department on it. So I want to read just a little snippet of what the contents of this email said, if I may, Marilyn.
Okay.
It is the essence of white privilege to be able to focus on a tree at the expense of seeing the forest. It is the essence of white fragility to claim victimhood when you are definitely not the victim. I'm disturbed that a white woman on a social work team at a major institution like the Seattle Cancer Care Alliance would try to play these games and would claim the status of victimhood in the face of a woman of color after the years of the era of Trump. She then continued on saying she will not privilege me, meaning Tammy, or any white person's perspective or opinion.
Well, it's hard for me to believe that somebody would put those kind of thoughts in writing, somebody who's in a position of power in a job. Well, so what happened next? There's a reason why we're going to get to the bottom line here.
Yes. So a little over a week after that email, I received that email. You know, I do want to mention that real quick that I did call HR after I spoke with this colleague, just to let them know that I was uncomfortable about, you know, my manager having directed me to it, and that it involved President Trump, and that I was really worried about my employment. And but and HR said, but it sounds like, you know, your conversation was very civil. And I said, yes, it was. And you know, she just said, you know, not at SCCA, Tammy. Nothing will happen to you. Not at SCCA. So a week later, I was terminated. I was called into a conference room by my manager, and her manager, my top leadership, was there. And he essentially said, let's cut right to the chase. Your ethnicity sensitivity and your values really don't align with our core values and mission. And then he just asked me if I had a ride home. And that was it. I was escorted out.
Oh, wow. So what did you do after that? And well, how are you fighting this?
Well, I do want to say that I stood alone for a very long time until I found the Coalition for Liberty. And I also want to say something that I think we believe at the Coalition for Liberty, and certainly Doug Turpin, the CEO and founder, believes that, you know, you begin to win when you decide to take action and you decide to speak up. I don't want this to happen to anybody else, not at my former institution, not at any other institution, even though I imagine it is still happening and it is still occurring even as we speak. I want to ensure that no one else experiences the loneliness, the trauma that I went through. These people took away my life's work. These people took away my dream. When patients enter a cancer center, I do not believe that they are concerned about who occupies the Oval Office. They are concerned about their lives, about how they're going to adjust to treatment, if they're going to even live through it. That is what they're concerned about. I'm going to have my attorney, Bob, who's on here, and Peter, my attorneys, tell you about what we're doing about it.
Okay, so I'd like to introduce the listeners to Robert Bouvette. He's the attorney, and Peter Barwick, who's with Coalition for Liberty. So who wants to go first? Go ahead and speak up.
I'll jump in there, Marilyn. We filed a lengthy complaint based on all these circumstances, alleging violations of federal law, state law, even city law. Essentially, the question is whether employers can require adherence to ideologies like this in the workplace, even though you know, from our perspective, they really have nothing to do with the duties of the job. So we're seeking punitive damages, compensatory damages, injunctive relief, you know, the whole nine yards. We think that we think it really will serve to demonstrate that this just can't happen. This is a problem, and we're going to do something about it.
Well, for your causes of action, are part of it discrimination? Or I'm kind of looking where people are thinking, well, what's the legal basis because Tammy was discriminated against? Or can you say that conversations like these and political ideologies have no room in the workplace? But is that illegal or just inappropriate? So how does that work?
Well, that's an interesting question that you asked. I mean, that's essentially the question that we are looking to answer through this lawsuit, or one of them anyway, is whether political discrimination of the sort that Tammy has faced is something that's actionable under Washington law and potentially under federal law. We've also included claims for discrimination, more conventional Title VII type of discrimination claims as well. But we think that what sets this apart from, you know, your standard employment discrimination cases is that aspect of it, the political aspect of it, and whether that's, you know, something that the employer can require.
I think this becomes so important because now when people are applying for jobs, one of my friends actually wants to move, but when she applies for jobs now, they're asking for a diversity statement, which they sound, you know, like these loyalty oaths, and some are written that way, where you say that you're committed to diversity, but you can't just say that I like all human beings, I'm a good person. You have to specifically point out that you're an awful person and you're going to try to be better if you happen to be white. And this seems so twisted and bizarre, and it certainly shouldn't be happening in the medical field, but it seems to be happening everywhere.
It is twisted, Marilyn. And, you know, the real irony of it is that they don't really expect you or want you to believe it. They just want you to say it.
Well, and, you know, it's really kind of sad because studies have shown that when you mandate something, it doesn't do well. It seems to be human nature that you'll rebel against mandates. And as I was saying in my rant, that we organically were coming together, and it's like, boom, this weird political ideology is trying to drive us apart. It saddens me.
It is really sad, Marilyn, to see what's happening in this country. It is, this DEI stuff is divisive. It pits one group against the other. I'm better than you, you know, you're not better than me. Rules for thee, but not for me. It's horrible. And I'm standing up to say, listen, you know, this is my story. This is what happened to me. And I'm going to speak out about it. And I really want to thank you for having us on. I do want to say that the Coalition for Liberty has been an enormous support to me. It has made all the difference for me, not only because I'm able to do this and file suit, but just emotionally, it has validated me and normalized, unfortunately, you know, what is happening. And I know that Peter can probably speak a little bit more about the CFL.
Well, Peter, yeah. You've got a couple of minutes to tell us a bit about it, and especially include your website.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Peter Barwick, the General Counsel for Coalition for Liberty. We're so glad to be able to help Tammy. You know, the coalition, it exists. A big part of our mission is to help people who find themselves victims of cancel culture, because we believe, as Tammy's already alluded to, that the only way to begin to reverse this proliferating practice of cancel culture is to bring accountability to those who perpetrate instances of cancel culture. these are real injustices, as we heard from Tammy, you know, in what she experienced. And Tammy had all positive reviews in her work and has been, you know, social care oncologist for over 20 years, very good at her job. And here she was being sort of targeted, in effect, and singled out in discriminatory ways that had nothing to do with her job and had no grounding in reality. If anything, the racism is on the other side, if you will, right? The very practice of DEI is sort of inherently racist. So we, you know, are glad to be able to support her in this, and we've you know, brought Bob in as counsel for this case. And I just want to say for all of your listeners, if there's anyone listening who has experienced themselves or knows someone who has experienced anything like what Tammy's describing, cancel culture type of behavior, unjust discrimination, whether it be under the banner of woke ideology or otherwise, to please reach out to us, because our aim is to help those who find themselves in those situations and who don't otherwise have the means to be able to push back. And so the only way we're going to end this is in fact by pushing back. So that's what we seek to do.
And please tell us your website.
It is coalitionforliberty.com. You can reach out to us there.
Okay. Well, I thank you. I thank everybody for coming on the show, and especially Tammy, who I'm sure these things take a lot out of you. So thank you again for telling us your story.
And thank you, Marilyn.
We'll talk again.
Thank you so
Thanks,
much.
Marilyn.
I'd like to thank everybody for listening to America Out Loud Pulse. As you know, we are always a beat ahead. I urge you to look at our new trending cloud. We've got it up on the revamped website, much easier to read and pick out topics you're interested in. And remember, we've still got our email question, and we'll send you an answer. You just email it in, first names are fine, to americaoutloud.com/pulse. And we'll get back to you, and it can be for the host or the guest. One more thing, we've got americaoutloud.shop. This is our shopping site. It's been up a few months, very popular. It's got books written by our guests and other books of interest, as well as products from many of the folks who are speakers on the show, products from Wellness Company and Cofix RX, Healthy Cell. So check it out. If you use the code OUTLOUD, you'll get a discount. So as I always say, whether you agree or have other opinions, please share the show. And until next week, say it loud. I'm free and I'm proud.